Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Friday, February 13th. I'm Olivia Rose. Finding someone you love and getting married can be a challenge, but what about staying married for 75 years? Ahead of Valentine's Day, KFSK's Taylor Heckert spoke with one Petersburg couple about what it takes to build a marriage that lasts more than three quarters of a century.
George and Floribel Rice's apartment at Petersburg's assisted living home is filled with memories.
When we moved into this place, I brought with me my lifelong treasures.
Floribel is 96. Her husband, George, is 98. Mementos from nearly a century of life fill cabinets around the room. Photos of the couple decorate the walls, alongside embroidered wall hangings depicting different marriage milestones. One for their 66th wedding anniversary reads, "How lucky did we get? Lovingly made for George by Floribel." By now, their marriage has well surpassed that anniversary. The Rices will be celebrating their 76th this March. It's an anniversary very few people live to see, and I wanted to know what keeps a couple married for a lifetime.
We've never questioned each other about how we feel about each other.
George is hard of hearing, so Floribel shared most of their stories. The two met in college at Western Washington University. Floribel was waiting tables, and George was a veteran going to college on the GI Bill. When George and Floribel decided to get married, she says her parents weren't fans, at least at first.
Mom and Dad figured that George and I would last about a year. That's the truth.
She says they eventually came around to George, and it never crossed the couple's mind to get divorced. The pair spoke to the local paper last year and shared that they worked as teachers for a few years in Washington before visiting Alaska and eventually making Petersburg home in 1960. The couple had four children and made a home on Saspe Island in the Wrangell Narrows across from Petersburg. They also liked to travel. As teachers, they were able to spend their summers in places like Mexico and Australia. Floribel says traveling with George was one of her favorite memories.
Oh, we have a blast together.
Is it important to be with someone you have fun with?
I think you can probably answer that yourself.
If you ask George how a marriage like theirs lasted so long, he has a simple answer.
Listen to what your wife tells you to do.
Meanwhile, Floribel has a different takeaway.
But we've never had a fight. Never. We've never had a discussion about, I wish I'd never married you or any of that. None of that.
Never fighting may be easier said than done for some couples trying to follow in their footsteps. Luckily, Floribel has more advice to share. If you want to be married for a long time, you also have to live for a long time. She recommends that couples stay away from alcohol.
Don't drink.
Really?
Yes, because it'll knock X number of years off your life. And George and I don't drink.
Floribel and George have had a lot of years to make memories together. She says they weren't perfect, but one thing they've always been certain about is their love for each other. In Petersburg, I'm Taylor Heckert.
There is now more time to comment on the future of the Federal Subsistence Board, which has authority over hunting and fishing on federal lands, on federal public lands. The U.S. Interior Department has extended the deadline for public comment until March 30th. The announcement comes as hundreds of Alaskans rushed to meet the original February 13th deadline to weigh in on the Interior Department's review of its subsistence management program. A spokesman for the department said as of Monday it had received over 430 comments, with more expected. Initially, there were only 60 days allowed for comment. Now there will be an additional 45 days. A Safari Club International petition is at the heart of the debate. The National Sport Hunting and Fishing Group calls for changes which rural subsistence users say threaten their legal right to hunt, fish, and provide for their families. The Sport Hunting and Fishing Group's main push is to do away with five public seats on the Federal Subsistence Board and return to its original structure, made up of five federal agency heads who would be required to defer to state wildlife managers. It also wants Rural Advisory Council members to be elected rather than appointed. Joe Williams, the tribal president of Saxman, a predominantly Native community outside Ketchikan, says most Alaska tribes are small with limited staff. Williams says with so much to consider, tribes need more time to gather input.
If I don't get it done, it doesn't get done. That's just the way it is. And there are a lot of tribes, federally recognized tribes in Alaska, which there are 229 federally recognized tribes that are in the same situation that I am.
Safari Club supporters say the proposals aren't anti-subsistence or anti-rural priority, but focused on protecting wildlife and reining in what it calls federal overreach. Opponents say the proposals would take away the voice of those who live closest to the resources and depend upon them for survival. Despite widespread disagreement over the issues, John Sturgeon, a longtime Safari Club policy advocate, agrees that the extension was needed. He says more time is needed to explain the group's proposals, which he says are misunderstood.
We are not trying to get rid of the Federal Subsistence Board or trying to get rid of subsistence. So hopefully a little more time, maybe we can get the word out a little bit better.
The Interior Department is also holding two statewide tribal consultation meetings next month to discuss the Federal Subsistence Review. These had already been scheduled. The Interior Department says its review is in the fact-finding stage. No changes will occur unless the secretaries for the Interior and Agriculture Departments, after weighing public input, decide to set a rulemaking process in motion. Federal fisheries regulators approved on Wednesday some limits on Western Alaska chum bycatch in the Bering Sea. The highly debated and long-awaited decision aims to protect declining salmon stocks while also minimizing harm to pollock fisheries. Alona Naden with the Alaska Desk has this story.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council voted to set a Western Alaska chum bycatch limit in the Bering Sea pollock fishery. The regulation includes a partial closure for the fishery if it exceeds the bycatch cap. The council, which manages federal fisheries off the coast of Alaska, said the move will balance protections for Western Alaska salmon returns while also allowing pollock fisheries to continue their harvest. Council member Nicole Kimball voted for the motion. She says it addresses those needs and reflects best available Western and indigenous science.
I think this is needed. I think it's going to change behavior. I think it's going to reduce Western Alaska chum bycatch. I'm sure, as per usual, nobody is very happy, but all of the discussions have really helped inform the outcome.
The trawl fishery in the Bering Sea near the Aleutian Islands is focused on pollock, but boats also scoop up other types of fish called bycatch. That includes chum salmon, some of which migrates to Western and Interior Alaska rivers and is a crucial subsistence resource there. But chum runs have been declining, leading to repeated fishing closures in some communities. The pollock industry had spoken against the strictest measures to limit chum bycatch, citing financial losses for them and for coastal communities economically tied to them. The council received more than 600 written comments about the issue leading up to the meeting. Council members also spent more than 3 days listening to public testimony over the phone and in person in Anchorage. The decision comes after years of debate and calls for action on the issue. Councilmember John Mahler is Alaska native, originally from Unalaska, and is a commercial fisherman. He says he's fortunate to put fish up each year and feels for those who can't.
I know how important that is to me, how important that is to my family, and passing that on to my children. I get that. And my heart is ripped out. Speaking with all of you that are living in the rivers right now that don't have that same ability that I have living in Southeast now.
Council member John Kurland also said it's been heartbreaking to hear stories about how the lack of salmon has affected people's food security, traditions, and well-being. But he says...
It's also been moving to be reminded about the socioeconomic benefits of the pollock fishery, the family businesses that operate catcher boats, the seafood processing capacity in many remote areas that really needs a steady flow of pollock to make it possible to process other species for smaller scale fisheries.
The council voted 8-3 to support a motion that compromises several proposals and avoids the strictest regulations. It sets a limit to Western Alaska chum bycatch of 45,000 fish with variations between different pollock sectors. Exceeding that limit would trigger a partial closure in half of the fishing corridor. And if a trawler fails to follow that, that closure will remain in effect all season the following year. Rachel Baker is the Deputy Commissioner at Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the Vice Chair of the Council. She presented that motion.
It's designed to hopefully influence behavior before the fleet ever reaches that threshold.
Baker says that the sections where the limit enclosures would take place are some of the most important areas for pollock fishing. That is also the area where the majority of Western Alaska chum are caught in the pollock fishery, and where tribes say it's crucial to let salmon pass to make it up the rivers. Several members who voted against the motion said it isn't likely to provide a meaningful improvement for salmon returns. But Baker argued that even a small increase counts.
We're at this table used to thinking about large volumes of fish in tons. And we heard in testimony that four fish were able to provide the needs for a potlatch.
The plan goes to the National Marine Fisheries Service next, before it can be implemented. In Anchorage, I am Alona Naidin.
Lunar New Year starts next week. The Alaska Chinese Association is celebrating the holiday and their 50th anniversary on Sunday with an event at Diamond High School in Anchorage. As Alaska Public Media's Ava White reports, part of the event includes a cultural performance that volunteers have spent the last several months preparing for.
Over a dozen people are holding up a golden dragon, weaving around a large room mimicking the movements of the mythical creature. A few others are in the corner, playing drums and clashing cymbals. Since October, these volunteers have been gathering at the Asian Alaskan Cultural Center in Spinard each Sunday for a couple of hours to practice the dragon dance. It's a traditional art form that features a lead dancer carrying a pearl for the dragon to chase. Board member Jerry Kung is coordinating the dragon dance this year. He says it's a team event, and each person plays an important role.
We put the strongest young man up front for the head of the dragon because that is pulling the rest of the dragon segments. We put the fastest person in the back because the tail is always chasing after the dragon.
Kung says it's been a challenge to keep a consistent team, but he's excited to showcase what the group has practiced over the last several months. The association has a second dragon that could be used, but not enough performers. Kung said it'd take another dozen people or so, but he hopes the upcoming celebration will encourage more people to get involved with the performances.
We would love to teach others what we learned and what we know about the dragon dance and have other people in our community participate as well.
The dragon has played a key role in Chinese culture for thousands of years and symbolizes good fortune, power, and strength. Lunar New Year, also called the Spring Festival, is the most important holiday in China.
Chinese New Year is essentially a combination of the Thanksgiving as well as Christmas. We want to bring them something special. You can feel the vibe of celebration. You can see all these smiley faces.
Mei Zhao with the ACA says the association was formed after Chinese immigrants settled in the state over generations. It started with about a dozen families in 1976, according to the association's website, but has now grown to over 200. Looking ahead, she hopes the association continues to encourage young people to embrace their culture and to define it in a way that feels authentic to them.
One common thing in the Chinese culture and in Alaska is there's a genuine open arm type of atmosphere that we want the members or even non-members feel that they belongs here.
The Golden Anniversary and Lunar New Year celebration is on Sunday at Diamond High School from noon to 4 p.m. In Anchorage, I'm Ava White.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.